How long I remained hunched in that tiny dark hole, I am not sure. What aroused me was a knock on the door. Startled, I gasped, "Come in!" The door opened. Standing there was a shockingly decrepit old sailor, a tattered tar-covered hat all but crushed in his gnarled and trembling hands. His clothing was poor, his manner cringing. "Yes," I managed to say.
"Miss, your trunk is here."
I looked beyond the door to the trunk's bulky outline. I saw at once how absurd it would be to even attempt bringing it into my space. The sailor understood.
"She's too big, isn't she?" he said.
"I think so," I stammered.
"Best put it in top cargo," he offered. "Right below. You can always fetch things there, miss."
"Yes, top cargo," I echoed without knowing what I was saying.
"Very good, miss," the man said,
and then pulled his forelock as a signal of obedience and compliance to a suggestion that he himself had made. But instead of going, he just stood there. "Yes?" I asked miserably.
"Begging your pardon, miss," the man murmured, his look more hangdog than ever. "Barlow's the name, and though it's not my business or place to tell you, miss, some of the others here, Jack Tars like myself, have deputized me to say that you shouldn't be on this ship. Not alone as you are. Not this ship. Not this voyage, miss."
"What do you mean?" I said, frightened anew. "Why would they say that?"
"Your being here will lead to no good, miss. No good at all. You'd be better off far from the Seahawk."
Though all my being agreed with him, my training, that it was wrong for a man of his low station to presume to advise me of anything, rose to the surface. I drew myself up. "Mr. Barlow," I said stiffly, "it's my father who has arranged it all."
"Very good, miss," he said, pulling at his forelock again. "I've been done my duty, which is what I'm deputized to do." And before I could speak further, he scurried off.
I wanted to run after him, to cry, "Yes, for God's sake, get me off!" But again, there was nothing in me that allowed for such behavior. Indeed, I was left with a despairing resolve never to leave the cabin until we reached America. Steadfastly, I shut my door. But by doing so, I made the space completely dark, and I quickly moved to keep it ajar. I was exhausted and desired greatly to sit down. But there was no place to sit. My next thought was to lie down. Trying to put notions of vermin out of mind, I made a move toward my bed, but discovered that it was too high for me to reach easily in my skirts. Then suddenly I realized I must relieve myself. But where was I to go? I had not the slightest idea. If you will be kind enough to recollect that during my life I had never once, not for a moment, been without the support, the guidance, the protection of my elders, you will accept my words as being without exaggeration when I tell you that at that moment I was certain I had been placed in a coffin. My coffin. It's hardly to be wondered, then, that I burst into tears of vexation, crying with fear, rage, and humiliation.